Usually when we think about the mindset of a successful tech CEO, the image that comes to mind is inherently calculated.
Right, very safe.
Yeah, exactly. We picture someone surrounded by spreadsheets, obsessing over risk mitigation, sitting in these climate-controlled boardrooms. They're essentially building an entire career around the concept of playing it safe.
It makes sense on a surface level. I mean, the corporate world is fundamentally built on this desire for predictability.
Totally.
Shareholders and boards, they want their business leaders to be the designated adults in the room, making slow, methodical choices that guarantee, steady incremental returns.
But then you step into the world of high-performance motorcycles, and that entire spreadsheet mentality just gets completely obliterated.
Oh, absolutely shattered.
Right. We're looking at a landscape today that is raw, it's visceral, and honestly, it's terrifying to anyone who hasn't experienced it. We're talking about an environment where the stakes are immediate, physical, and just absolutely unforgiving.
The transition from a sterile boardroom to the saddle of a superbike, it forces a complete neurological shift. You are entering the absolute definition of an adrenaline-fueled environment.
Yeah.
A missed calculation here doesn't mean a bad quarterly earnings report. It means a catastrophic physical failure.
Welcome to the deep dive. We have a highly specific kind of fascinating mission for you today. We were exploring the intersection of pure, unadulterated adrenaline and high-level corporate strategy.
It's such a cool concept.
It really is. We want to uncover how life or death decisions made in a split second on the asphalt actually map perfectly onto high-stakes business continuity. And our source material today is an incredible blog called Managers on Motorcycles Talking Business. It's written by Aaron Yoran. Yoran is a marketing consultant. He rides a Yamaha Tenere 700, and his entire project is based on interviewing top executives while they ride motorcycles together.
The genius of Aaron's approach is the physical displacement. Over the years, he has taken dozens of previous managers out of their corner offices and, well, just put them out in the elements.
Right, out in the wind.
Exactly. When you interview a CEO in their office, you usually get rehearsed PR talking points.
Oh.
But when you put them on a bike, dealing with wind resistance and traffic, their true instincts take over. The corporate mask drops.
So today, we are zeroing in on his latest conversation. It features a man named Guy Kapelusznik. Guy is the founder and CEO of Amitos, which is this boutique IT infrastructure and cybersecurity firm.
Yeah.
But the thing we are really going to unpack today is Guy's daily commuter vehicle.
Yeah, this is wild.
He rides a Suzuki GSX 1300 Hayabusa.
For listeners who might not be deep into motorcycle culture, calling a Hayabusa a motorcycle is almost doing it a disservice.
It's an understatement.
Yeah, it is essentially a ground-based fighter jet.
I looked up the specs and the source material, and it is mind-blowing. It produces roughly 190 horsepower and is capable of hitting 200 kilometers per hour in 7 seconds.
7 seconds. Just think about that acceleration.
Right. So the core question we are presenting to you today is, how does actively choosing to ride a machine capable of that level of violence make someone a better, more calculated CEO of a cybersecurity firm?
The immediate assumption would be that Guy is simply, an adrenaline junkie using the bike as a weekend escape from the stress of his job.
Sure.
But reading through Aaron's interview, it becomes incredibly clear that this is an entire mental framework. Operating at the extreme edge of physics isn't an escape from his boardroom thinking. It is the laboratory where his business philosophy is forged.
To really understand how Guy's mind works, I think we have to look at where he came from. Before starting Amitos about 14 and a half years ago, he spent nearly a decade at a massive enterprise IT firm called One. In the interview, he explicitly describes that environment as a golden cage.
We see that specific narrative all the time in the tech industry, right? The golden cage provides total security. You have unlimited resources, massive infrastructure, brand recognition. But the trade-off is agility. When you are in a giant corporation, turning the ship takes months. You become a tiny cog in a very slow-moving machine. And for someone with an entrepreneurial mind, that safety actually feels like suffocation.
So he shatters the golden cage to build Amitos. Today, his company has about 120 employees. But Guy manages a really fascinating duality here. He positions Amitos as a boutique firm, yet he insists on having the heavy infrastructure of a massive tech giant.
Right.
He wants to offer the personal, rapid response touch of a small agency. but with the undeniable firepower of a massive corporation.
Yeah.
You see this exact same duality reflected perfectly in his garage.
His choice of motorcycles is a literal physical manifestation of how he structured his company. He owns two vastly different machines designed for entirely different purposes.
I was absolutely obsessed with the breakdown of his garage in the blog. For touring, specifically with his wife, Dana, he rides a BMW K1600B.
Oh, yeah.
This is a massive, smooth, six-cylinder touring machine. It is so heavy and complex, it actually features a reverse gear.
Which is crazy for a bike.
Right. That bike represents comfort, reliability, and long-distance partnership. It is the safe, stable infrastructure you want when you are carrying precious cargo.
But then you look at his daily commute. He jokingly refers to his Hayabusa as his scooter.
His scooter?
This 190 horsepower monster is what he uses to get to work. When you analyze that pairing, you realize Guy is building a Mitos to mirror that garage.
So Guy is essentially building his company the way he builds his garage. He wants the raw, terrifying power of the Hayabusa, but the smooth two-seater reliability of the BMW for his clients.
Exactly. He wants his company to possess the raw, explosive power and speed of the Hayabusa to outmaneuver competitors. But the circle he delivers to his clients must feel like riding on the back of that smooth, reliable BMW.
The Hayabusa is also a tool for, like, mental conditioning.
Mm.
Guy explains to Aaron that to think clearly, that can slice through the noise of complex IT and business problems, he requires the extreme physical demands of riding the superbike.
He needs the wind tearing at him, the deafening noise of the engine, and the absolute hyper-focus the machine demands just to stay alive.
The psychology behind that is fascinating. When you are operating a vehicle at those speeds, your brain simply does not have the spare processing power to worry about a delayed vendor payment.
Right.
Or, you know, an annoying email from a client.
Right.
It forces a state of flow. The extreme physical danger acts as a filter, burning off all the trivial anxieties of office politics and leaving only pure present moment awareness.
And that mandatory focus on the physical road actually bust Guy's most counterintuitive business rule. And I have to admit, when I first read this rule in the source material, it sounded incredibly dangerous until the physics of it were fully explained.
Guy considers this his absolute number one rule of riding, and it completely subverts standard logic. He states that the most dangerous place you can possibly be on a motorcycle is stuck in the middle of traffic, moving at the exact same speed as the cars around you.
Yeah.
To survive, he argues, you must actively ride 10 to 20% faster than the flow of traffic. Okay, let me push back on this, because my immediate reaction as a driver is that speeding equals danger. If I'm on the highway and a motorcycle blows past me going 20% faster than everyone else, my first thought is that they have a death wish.
Sure.
Common sense dictates that increasing your speed shrinks your reaction time. How does pushing the speedometer higher actually translate to safety?
It sounds paradoxical for sure, but you have to look at the geometry and spatial awareness of the road. Let's break down the mechanics of moving at the exact speed of traffic.
Okay.
If you are mashing the speed of the cars around you, you are static in their relative environment. You are lingering in blind spots for miles at a time. If the driver next to you drops their coffee and swerves, you have nowhere to go. You are passively waiting for someone else's mistake to kill you.
Okay, I see the flaw in the conventional wisdom there. If you are just floating in the herd, you are at the mercy of the most distracted driver in that herd.
Exactly. By choosing to ride 10 to 20% faster than the flow, you completely alter the dynamic. You push all the potential hazards into your forward field of vision. You approach a car, clear their blind spot efficiently, and leave them behind.
You're passing the problem.
Yes. You dictate the terms of engagement. Guy calls this creating a sterile environment around the bike. You aren't speeding recklessly, you are actively piloting your way out of the danger zone.
That makes perfect sense on asphalt. But here is where Guy's brilliance shines, I think. He applies this literal concept directly to how he runs Mitos. He looked at the IT industry and realized that moving at the speed of the market is the fastest way to get your business killed.
Mm-hmm.
If competitors take 3 days to send a quote or 48 hours to fix a server problem, Mitos responds in hours. He states clearly in the interview that they aim to operate 50% faster than the industry standard.
And by moving faster than the market, Mitos is actively outrunning business collisions. Think about the market as that flow of highway traffic. If you move at the exact same pace as your competitors, a sudden economic downturn or a massive technological shift, the business equivalent of a pothole, will take all of you out simultaneously.
Wow, yeah.
Operating 50% faster allows Guy to spot opportunities and capture them before his competitors even check their rearview mirrors.
It reframes our entire understanding of risk.
Right.
Speed isn't the vulnerability. Blending in and moving with the herd is the vulnerability.
That is a...
But let's look at the mechanics of speed. Whether you are launching a Hayabusa off the line or trying to make a 120-person tech firm operate 50% faster than its rivals, it is an absolute recipe for disaster if your vehicle is carrying dead weight.
That brings us to the crucial engineering concept of the power-to-weight ratio. You cannot achieve that level of agility without a radical approach to how the organization is built.
In the sport bike world, the power-to-weight ratio is like a religion. Engineers will spend millions of dollars in research and development just to shave 50 grams off a piece of titanium.
Yeah, every ounce counts.
Every single millimeter of metal that does not actively contribute to making the bike accelerate faster or corner sharper is ruthlessly stripped away. Guy took this brutal, uncompromising engineering logic and overlaid it onto his human workforce.
And the statistics he shares with Aaron are staggering. Out of a 120-person company, Guy mandates that 97% of his employees are what he categorizes as producers.
Wait, 97%?
Yes. These are the network engineers, the cybersecurity analysts, the field technicians, the people actively generating value and solving problems on the ground.
That never requires a double take. 97%. That means out of 120 people, maybe 3 or 4 individuals are handling administrative or management tasks. There are virtually no middle management hitchhikers in Amitos.
Basically none.
Think about your own corporate environment for a second. How many layers of management exist solely to forward emails from one department to another or to hold meetings about scheduling other meetings? Guy has eliminated that entire bloated middle layer. His company is all engine.
But running a company that lean, where frontline engineers are likely empowered to make massive client decisions on the fly just to maintain that speed, it requires immense trust. And this leads us to a vital counterbalance.
Right.
Any seasoned rider will tell you that the only reason they have the psychological confidence to twist the throttle and unleash 190 horsepower is because they have absolute implicit trust in their brakes.
Brakes unlock the ability to speed. If you have even a sliver of doubt about your stopping power, your survival instinct will prevent you from going fast.
In Guy's IT infrastructure world, his high-performance brakes take the form of what he calls the rollback rule. It is a non-negotiable operational standard within Amitos.
Let's explore the mechanics of this because it is brilliant. Amitos will never, under any circumstances, perform a system update, install new software, or execute a massive server migration for a client without first establishing a digital undo button.
Right. Consider what a massive server migration actually entails for a business. It usually terrifies CEOs because if it goes wrong, the company is paralyzed.
Oh, it's a nightmare.
Imagine a scenario where Amitos pushes an update and it unexpectedly crashes a client's entire finance database on a Thursday afternoon. In a standard tech firm, that triggers a massive crisis. Operations halt, revenues are paused, and engineers spend 24 hours sweating over keyboards trying to patch the error.
But because Guy insists on the rollback rule, there is no panic.
Yeah.
If the system crashes, they simply hit the brakes. They activate the rollback protocol, and the entire digital environment instantly reverts to the exact state it was in before the update started. The client loses zero data and zero downtime. The brilliant insight here is that ultimate speed, the ability for Amitos to innovate, push aggressive updates, and move 50% faster than competitors, is only unlocked because they have constructed ultimate safety nets.
It acts as the traction control of the IT world. The engineers can push the technological machine to its absolute limit because they know the rollback system will instantly catch them the moment the digital tire slips.
However, a software rollback only protects the digital environment. A digital undo button is completely useless if the physical computer running the software melts down.
Mm-hmm.
You can have the best brakes on the market, but if the physical frame of the motorcycle snaps in half under the pressure of the engine, you are still going to crash.
Which introduces a Hebrew word that Guy uses repeatedly throughout his interview with Aaron Tashtit. It translates directly to infrastructure. Guy views infrastructure as the foundation that makes everything else possible.
And what I found so compelling in the source material is that his definition of infrastructure doesn't start with servers. It starts in his living room. He talks extensively about his wife, Dana.
Yeah, this part was beautiful.
He refuses to categorize her with a cliche of being his anchor. An anchor holds you in one place. Instead, he describes her as his rocket engine.
The psychological infrastructure of a CEO is rarely discussed, but it's paramount. A CEO absorbs immense amounts of risk. If a business decision fails, it impacts the family's financial security.
Right.
Guy explicitly states that knowing Dana fully supports his aggressive business maneuvers gives him the psychological armor to take massive risks. You cannot build a disruptive, high-speed company if your home base is fragile.
That deep belief in foundational infrastructure completely dictates his hiring process, too. When Guy is looking to expand his team of 97% producers, he ignores standard cookie-cutter resumes. He is hunting for a very specific psychological trait he calls the writer gene.
You can teach almost anyone the technical syntax of a coding language, but you cannot teach the writer gene. Guy describes it as an innate, burning curiosity paired with a relentless drive to solve puzzles when the instruction manual is missing.
Let's ground that in reality. What does an engineer with a writer gene look like? It's the kid who took apart the family television just to see how the circuits connected and then stayed up all night figuring out how to put it back together so their parents wouldn't notice.
Yes.
It's a mentality. It's the willingness to get your hands dirty, to tinker, and to push through the frustration of the unknown.
So if the employees possessing the writer gene serve as the high-performance engine of Amitos and the rollback rules act as the brakes, we still need to address the armor. You wouldn't take a Hayabusa on the highway wearing flip-flops and a t-shirt.
So if the employees are the engine, what's the armor? Guy makes a razor-sharp parallel between motorcycle safety gear and corporate cybersecurity. He argues that relying on standard, off-the-shelf IT antivirus software is the equivalent of strapping on a cheap plastic novelty helmet. It might check a legal compliance box, but in a catastrophic crash, it provides zero actual protection. It is entirely passive.
Amitos approaches security from an active posture. They provide a service called CISO On Demand. CISO stands for Chief Information Security Officer.
Let's explain the mechanism of how this differs from standard antivirus. Think of your basic antivirus as wearing a standard leather riding jacket. If you fall, the leather absorbs some of the physical abrasion from the asphalt. It mitigates damage after the accident has already occurred.
Exactly. The opposite of a passive defense, CISO On Demand acts as an active computerized traction control system. It isn't just sitting there waiting for an impact. It is dynamically analyzing thousands of network data points every single second.
Wow.
If an employee accidentally clicks on a sophisticated phishing link, which is the digital equivalent of the motorcycle's rear tire suddenly slipping on a patch of wet asphalt, the CISO system instantly senses the anomaly. It automatically cuts the throttle, isolates the compromised computer from the rest of the company network, and shifts the weight to stabilize the system. It prevents the crash before the client even realizes they were in danger.
They are actively piloting the client's network rather than just putting a helmet on it. But cyber threats, as terrifying and prevalent as they are, represent only half the battle. We still live in a physical world. What happens when the threat isn't a malicious line of code sent by a hacker, but a kinetic, physical threat to the infrastructure itself?
We have to confront the physical reality of the digital cloud. The tech industry has used the word cloud so effectively that we've collectively hallucinated that our data is just invisible magic floating in the atmosphere.
Right. It's just a nebulous concept up there.
But the cloud is heavy metal. It lives on physical servers. It requires mass amounts of electricity, industrial cooling systems, and physical perimeter security. Because Guy's philosophy is rooted in absolute physical infrastructure, his tashtit, he takes this reality to its extreme logical conclusion.
Which, wild.
The Amitos server farm isn't sitting in a generic office park. It is located inside a fully protected, heavily fortified underground bunker equipped with its own independent power generators.
It sounds like paranoia until the real world proves it necessary. The source material provides a deeply intense factual anecdote about business continuity that justifies every ounce of this extreme preparation. During a recent conflict, a missile struck in close proximity to the physical office of one of Amitos' clients in Haifa.
We need to pause and absorb the operational reality of that. The physical building where that client's team worked was instantly compromised and rendered entirely unusable.
For most companies, that is a business-ending event. But because Guy had aggressively pushed this specific client to migrate onto his hardened infrastructure, they didn't miss a beat. The very next day, that client's finance team wasn't sitting at home in a panic trying to salvage laptops from rubble. They were sitting safely inside Guy's underground bunker. Amitos actually maintains up to 4 physical desks inside this bunker, specifically for clients. If the outside world's internet grid or physical infrastructure collapses, a client can physically drive to the bunker, sit down, plug directly into the generator-powered servers, and run their company's payroll.
That is the ultimate uncompromising test of infrastructure. Everyone says their data is backed up, but Guy can look a client in the eye and say, when the sky is literally falling, you have a desk and a power source waiting for you underground.
It's a level of preparation that seems almost excessive until you learn about Amitos' client roster. This exact methodology is why they are trusted to work with the Ministry of Defense.
When you handle infrastructure for defense agencies, the margin for error just evaporates. The standard isn't try your best. The standard is zero mistakes. Guy details getting unannounced phone calls at 3 a.m. from the MODD running simulated high-stress cyber attack drills.
If you are running a company with a bloated middle management layer, or if your engineers lack the writer gene, you fail that drill. At 3 a.m., you have to be awake, analytical, and perfectly precise.
It perfectly illustrates the difference between an amateur Sunday rider taking a leisurely cruise through the hills and a professional MotoGP racer operating a machine at the absolute physical limit of human reaction time. When the Mos calls, the infrastructure has to hold.
It all circles back to the mindset required to saddle a Hayabusa. When we opened this deep dive, it was incredibly easy to look at a CEO riding a 190-horsepower superbike and dismiss it as a midlife crisis, or just a guy blowing off steam to escape his spreadsheets.
But Jorn's brilliant interview framework revealed the underlying truth. Riding that motorcycle isn't a distraction from Guy Kapelusznik's corporate responsibilities. It is the ultimate high-stakes training ground for them.
The mapping is flawless. Shedding the bloated corporate weight so 97% of your team operates as a high-performance engine. Building an unbreakable frame that attached it of psychological trust with your spouse and physical trust with an underground bunker.
Exactly.
Implementing the absolute digital brakes of a rollback button so your team can push the boundaries of innovation without the terror of crashing a client's system.
And perhaps the most vital lesson is his complete rejection of conventional corporate wisdom. The business world teaches us that satiety is found by moving with the herd. Guy proves that blending in is actually your greatest vulnerability.
We want to turn this over to you, the listener. Think about your own business, career, or daily life. Are you operating with a rollback plan? Do you have the safety nets in place that actually empower you to take aggressive risks? Or are you paralyzed by the fear of making a mistake? Look at your calendar. How much of your week is spent acting as a producer? And how much time are you just hitchhiking on someone else's project?
It leads to a final thought worth mulling over long after this finishes. We spend an enormous amount of our professional lives trying to build our own golden cages. We seek out the safe, predictable roles. We naturally assume that playing it safe, staying in the middle of the pack, moving at the speed of everyone else, is the best way to survive.
Right.
But what if the middle of the pack is actually the most dangerous place you can be? What would it look like for you to open the throttle and operate just 10% faster than your surroundings?
If a Hayabusa rider is actually vastly safer by leaning into the danger, taking control of the throttle, and actively maneuvering around the flow of traffic, it makes you wonder. The illusion of safety might be the most dangerous place you can be.
Sometimes the only way to get a clear view of the road ahead is to step out of the herd and create your own sterile environment.
You just have to be willing to feel the wind. Thank you so much for joining us on this deep dive. We'll catch you on the next one.